Ken Wilber is a spiritual philosopher and the author of many books. And through the part of the work of his that examines stages of human consciousness, he's become a leading contributor to the popular understanding of the existence and importance of these stages, or what he also calls ways of existence of human development. This is a piece from Mark Michael Lewis from a website called Rational Spirituality, which I thought was a title that should appeal to a number of you use. Us thinking folks. He offers a brief introduction of his favored model of levels of consciousness, which is called spiral dynamics, followed by a description of the main characteristics of each of the eight stages. Each of these are assigned a color as well as a label, and then he provides some examples, rough characteristics, and the percentage of people in those stages. So this might sound complex, but you'll see it's pretty simple as I get to it. And some of his descriptions weren't written in full sentences, so they're just kind of little phrases and catchphrases that you can absorb sort of holistically. So he does introduce it by saying this, Ken Wilber. In my book, Integral Psychology, I summarize over 100 developmental psychologists, East and West, ancient and modern and postmodern. Spiral dynamics is only one of the 100, but I use it quite a bit because it is fairly simple and easy to learn. Based on extensive research by psychologist Claire Graves and developed by Don Beck and Christopher Cowan, spiral dynamics sees human beings evolving or developing through eight major waves of consciousness. For convenience, he says, here's my brief summary of these from my book, A Theory of Everything. The first stage is beige. We go from lowest to highest. The first stage is beige, known as archaic or instinctual. This is the level of basic survival. Food, water, warmth, sex, safety are the only priorities. And you use your instincts just to survive. You see this in the first human societies, in newborn infants, in sort of street people and people who are struggling with mental illness, just getting by. The distinct self is barely awakened. You're just part of a whole and don't have a lot of distinct sense of identity. The second stage, so that's the first, beige, archaic, instinctual. Number two, purple, known as magical or animistic. Thinking is animistic. Magical spirits, good and bad, swarm over the earth, leaving blessings, curses, and spells which determine events. The spirits exist in ancestors and bond the tribe, and kinship and lineage establish political ties and power. This is seen in sort of voodoo-like cultures where there's blood oaths, ancient grudges, good luck charms, family rituals, magical ethnic beliefs and superstitions. This is strong in third world settings, gangs, athletic teams, and corporate tribes. You see those baseball players who hit a home run and come and cross themselves or do something else. It's that, even though that's a different expression of it, it's an animistic belief, like some God is watching you and helping you hit the home run or not. So this tends to be about 10% of the population. Third stage is red, and this is known as power. Or if we remember back to last week when I used Hawkins to differentiate between power and force, you can really think of this as force rather than sort of spiritual power. This is the first stage of emergence of a distinct self. It's powerful, impulsive, egocentric, heroic. The gods are archetypal power gods and goddesses, magic and mythic spirits, forces to be reckoned with, both good and bad. You see this in the Greek pantheon of gods and goddesses, for example. It's the basis of feudal empires. The world is a jungle full of threats and predators, and feudal lords conquer others, outfox and dominate them, and then protect underlings in exchange for obedience and labor. This stage enjoys itself to the fullest without remorse or regret. It's ruthless. This is seen in what we might call the terrible twos in human development. Also rebellious youth, feudal kingdoms, James Bond villains, gang leaders, soldiers of fortunes, Lord of the Flies type of arrangements. 20% of the population roughly lives in this red brute force kind of mentality. The fourth is blue, called mythic law and order. Here, life has meaning, direction, and purpose, with outcomes determined by an all-powerful other, typically God or order. This righteous order enforces a code of conduct based on absolutist and unwavering principles of right and wrong. Violating the codes has severe, perhaps everlasting consequences. Following the code yields rewards for the faithful. There are rigid social hierarchies. It's paternalistic. There's only really one right way to think about everything. It's the basis of ancient nations. It's law and order. Impulsivity is controlled through guilt, literal and fundamentalist beliefs, whether religious or secular. It's seen in Puritan America, Confucian China, Singapore's type of discipline, totalitarianism, codes of chivalry and honor, religious fundamentalism and evangelicalism, the moral majority, and uncritical patriotism. It's about 40% of the population. It's important to note that red and blue are both pre-modern in this schema. They're pre-modern or pre-rational schemas. The first step into modern consciousness, and we're moving along here. I know this is long, but it's going to be worth it as I tie it together in my sermon. Orange. So move to blue, mythic order, to orange, which is called autonomy and achievement. At this wave of consciousness, the self escapes from the herd mentality of blue and seeks truth and meaning in individualistic terms. It's deductive, experimental, objective, mechanistic, operational, scientific in the typical sense. The world is a machine with natural laws that can be learned, mastered, and manipulated for one's own purposes. It's highly achievement-oriented, and especially in America, highly materialistic-oriented. The world is a chessboard on which winners gain preeminence over losers. It's the world of marketplace alliances, manipulating the Earth's resources for one's gain, the basis of industrial and financial empires and corporate states. It's seen in colonialism, in materialism, in secular humanism, in Wall Street, and about 30% of the population lives in this state. The next is green. Here there's a big shift, because the green is the first postmodern stage of consciousness. It's egalitarian, communitarian. It emphasizes human bonding, ecological sensitivity, and networking. It says that the human spirit must be freed from greed, dogma, and divisiveness. Feelings and caring supersede cold rationality. It's about cherishing the earth and life. It's anti-hierarchical. It emphasizes dialogue and relationships. It's based in value. It's the basis of value communities, and we could consider many UU congregations value communities, which Ken Wilber says are freely chosen affiliations based on shared sentiments. And it has pluralistic values. It wants to encourage diversity and multiculturalism, and shows a greater degree of sensitivity in caring for the earth and its inhabitants. Some examples are deep ecology, postmodernism, democratic socialism, liberation theology, animal rights, ecofeminism, postcolonialism, diversity movements, human rights, ecopsychology, etc. It's a powerful stage, but only about 10% of the people at this time are currently in it. Maybe one psychologist notes that it's probably higher in America or in Western Europe than 10%. So these are the six of the eight stages, and together make up what Spiral Dynamics calls first tier levels. And here's the thing, what none of these appreciate at the first tier is the existence of others. Each stage thinks that its worldview is the correct or best perspective. It reacts negatively if challenged. It lashes out when it is threatened. Blue, law and order, is very uncomfortable with both of its neighbors, red impulsiveness and orange individualism. Orange individualism thinks blue order is for suckers and green egalitarianism is weak and woo-woo. Green egalitarianism cannot easily abide value rankings and hierarchies or anything that appears remotely authoritarian and thus reacts strongly to blue and orange. And that begins to change in what we call second-tier thinking. With the completion of the green stage, human consciousness is poised for a quantum jump. Because second-tier consciousness, which is called yellow, holistic, and turquoise, integral, is aware of these interior stages of development. It steps back and grasps the big picture, the whole. Thus, second-tier thinking appreciates the necessary role that all of the various stages play. Moreover, in the second tier, we can activate or use these as life circumstances warrant. For example, in emergency situations, we can activate red power drives. In response to chaos, we might need to activate blue law and order. In looking for a new job, we might need to orange achievement to help us get out there and find it. In marriage and with friends, we might value close green bonding. Each stage has healthy and unhealthy expressions, and when healthy, all have something to contribute. Second-tier thinking also looks for links and joining points between these systems, and thus it begins to embrace, include, and integrate them into holistic or integral networks. In my own words now, this level of consciousness, holistic integration, is the leading edge of personal and political evolution in the developed world. And with this as the framework, we'll explore some of the implications in a few more minutes. So in our reading, we heard how spiral dynamics suggests that people, groups, and entire cultures go through different stages of development. And we heard how spiral dynamics color codes them to make it easier to keep track. And this is very short. Here's a quick overview again, because I know it's hard to absorb the first time through, but this will be much shorter. From lowest to highest, beige, archaic or instinctual, the level of basic survival, began with the emergence of Homo sapiens. Purple, stage two, magical, animistic, magical spirits, curses, and spells determine events. Tribal kinship and lineage establish political links. Began about 50,000 BCE. Stage three, red, power or force. It's gained through predatory, egocentric actions. Again, egocentric, me is the red stage. The basis of feudal empires, gangs, and the like. Began with city-states about 4,000 BCE. Stage four, blue, traditional or mythic law and order. It's conformist, ethnocentric, us versus them, right versus wrong, good versus evil, mythical thinking and belief structures, fundamentalist religion or absolutist anything, my country right or wrong. Rules are paramount, for example, the Ten Commandments began with monotheism about 3,000 BCE. Again, all of these constitute pre-modern stages of human development. Then along comes orange, autonomy, the first modern stage. It's world-centric, industrial, materialistic, science and empiricism, democracy and the rule of law, academia, ambition, Wall Street. Began about 1750 with the emergence of the European Enlightenment and democracy. Stage six, green, egalitarian, pluralistic, postmodern, world-centric, relational, sees multiple perspectives and relative truth. Nobody has the absolute truth. Multiculturalism, environmentalism, nonviolence began about 1875 with the abolition of slavery and the emergence of the women's suffrage movement and so forth, rose again strongly in the 1960s. So, the idea that both people and society evolve through these different stages of first-tier development, but of course you've heard of arrested development. And there are powerful cultural forces, religious teachings, family and tribal traditions, social expectations, political affiliations, media viewpoints, etc., that can lock people into a stage and slow or even stop growth. Plus, as we heard, these are all first-tier stages. So they're all 100% convinced that they're right and everyone else is wrong. Each deeply believes that its outlooks and values are the only valid ones. I don't have the reference for where this next piece came from, but someone summed up the first-tier problem as follows, beginning with the pre-rational red level. The person or culture locked into the power through force red stage looks at everyone and says, "You, I'm blowing you up." The mythic blue stage, the law and order stage, which is also pre-rational, looks at everyone and says, "You're all going to hell because you don't believe in, insert favorite god of eternal judgment here." The orange modernist autonomy level looks at the modern green egalitarians and says, you tree-hugging New Age hippies, get a job and contribute to the economy, will you? And quit gazing at those crystals. Green looks at orange and says, you greedy capitalists, you're totally destroying our planet, and my nonviolent self hates you for it. Not real helpful, right? But what is helpful is to realize that all of these are first-tier levels, which allows us now to step back and begin to grasp that every stage has a partial truth and important strengths to offer. As we edge toward the second level tier of consciousness, which are holistic, systemic, and what's called mature world-centric, we can hold multiple perspectives. We can see the need to take care of our environment, green, not in the Green Party sense, but in this level, and the need for a powerful economy, orange, and the need for social rules and regulations, blue, and the need to take aggressive and sometimes defensive action when circumstances require it, red. This is what Ken Wilber calls the ability to transcend and include, meaning that when we transcend a current stage and move into a higher stage of development, we include what's good about the prior stages rather than rejecting them. And ultimately, as individuals and a culture, as we evolve to a second tier level of consciousness, we have available to us and understand the need to balance what's good about all the prior stages. This also frees us from the illusion that because some aspects of a particular stage can serve us, everything about the stage must be valid and good. It opens our vision and allows us to see and deal with the shadow side of each stage. For instance, orange's valuing of autonomy and achievement can be great, but when expressed as the striving for personal gain at the expense of the community or the nation or the environment, it needs to be curbed. But if you're locked into the orange level, you can't see that. Any constraint or requirement of accountability for what happens downstream from you is just interpreted as a block to your individual rights. And this brings us to the other facet of what we're talking about that we're going to explore today. Each stage is a leap in consciousness that brings with it a new set of core values. So each first tier stage is going to have fundamentally different views about the role of institutions, such as government, business, and other social structures, and what their function should be. And this allows us to recognize that what's commonly called the culture wars are really in large part clashes between individuals and groups who are in different stages. Of course, there are varying points of view within each stage, but the biggest differences, those seemingly unbridgeable gaps in basic outlook, belief, loyalties, and values, are largely due to people being at different levels of consciousness. So at this point then, quickly, it might help us to better appreciate each cultural stage if we know that everyone emerged in response to a prior stage gone bad. For instance, during the Dark Ages, which roughly spanned 500 to 1,000 of the Common Era, most of Europe was ruled by ruthless warlords who terrorized and abused the commoners, personifying the red stage of gaining and holding power through brute force. And of course, we see pockets of this still today. So the appearance and ascendancy of the blue law and order stage was an immense relief to most people. And a couple of centuries later, it seems self-evident that this higher stage was a better way to live. But by the late Middle Ages, blue was choking on the unhealthy expressions and excesses of its own stage. The Catholic Church, then the main keeper of law and order, sponsored the marauding and torture of the Crusades and the Inquisition to ensure conformity, a key aspect of that stage, conformity both to its version of truth and to a certain social order, with, no surprise, church authorities on top. So along comes a new stage, orange autonomy, and with it the budding scientific method and modern rationality as dominant modes of thought. These eventually replace much of the blind faith and iron grip of the church and its ruling allies. And of course, eventually democracy is one result. But as we're seeing right now, orange also has its excesses. So green egalitarianism emerges on a larger scale to counter these by insisting that we consider the marginalized people that orange has often bludgeoned in the environment that orange has abused. We saw this most clearly with the advent of the civil rights movement and environmental and women's movements in the middle of the last century. Thus, green consciousness, the top of the first tier stages, has a lot to offer. And by the way, again, many you use are some combination of orange and green. But because green is postmodern and wants to include everyone and consider all points of view, it can be less decisive and less effective at leading than either blue or orange, who not only tend to think they're right, but are also more willing to malign those that disagree. And the angst and disappointment of seeing a broader view of things but not being able to enact the needed changes right away can make Greens either withdraw from the fray or judge the lower stages so harshly that they become just as intolerant as the red brute force stage. They don't usually lash out as red does, but they don't listen or compromise or create connections either. Does any of this sound familiar? So again, it's vital to recognize that every stage has strengths to offer, so that as we move into the second tier stages of consciousness, in spiral dynamics called yellow holistic and turquoise integral, we transcend and include rather than transcend and exclude what came before. This is important on a personal level because let's say we're at the green level. We can hold the main egalitarian and holistic values of green as primary, but if we reject what came before, we don't have ready access to the other primal energies, the assertive autonomy of orange, or the positive order and discipline of blue, or the protective power of red. And it's also crucial on a social and political level, because the better we understand how these stages and value sets are influencing different segments of the population, the better we can interact in ways that honor the healthy expressions of each stage, help to minimize its unhealthy expressions, and have the greatest influence on guiding people in society toward the next evolutionary stage for them. You can't skip stages, but you can move from one to the next. And now that you know about them, start putting your knowledge to work by trying a two-part exercise at home, or in the car, or out in the world. Part one is that when you hear something in the public square that rubs you the wrong way, rather than jump to oppositional judgment, see if you can identify the level that the speaker likely inhabits. See which stage they're in. And then, even if they seem to be coming from an unhealthy or at least narrow-minded expression of that stage, see if you can counterbalance your reaction by recalling something positive that comes from that stage. For instance, as a UU minister, I sometimes bristle when someone claims that there's only one valid path to God, and that, lo and behold, it's the path they're on. But if I can remember that they're at the blue stage of mythic law and order, where both society and religion, where in both society and religion, following the right code yields rewards, and not following it yields punishment, which has rigid social hierarchies that are paternalistic, patriarchal, and absolutist, with only one right way to really think about everything, then I'm less likely to react negatively because I realize that their statement is merely typical of this level. And if I can then remember that law and order is an important element of the relatively free society that I enjoy, then I can appreciate that blue has benefits as well as limitations. So again, first see if you can identify the person's level, then spot something useful that it also provides. Personally, I think of myself, and after today, some of you may too, as what I call grello, green moving to yellow. Again, green, the top first tier stage, is the first postmodern stage. And yellow is the initial second tier stage, which is holistic or post-postmodern. And from this vantage point, yes, some things look bleak right now. And yes, we need to do and resist as much as we can some of the regressive changes and damages that's being done. But in the midst of this, never doubt that we have entered a new historical epoch. Just as the dominance of feudal warlords was replaced by the rule of church authorities and kings, and just as these were later replaced by democracy, the ascendancy of these higher levels of consciousness is happening, and culture and politics will inevitably evolve to reflect this. An integral thinker named Steve McIntosh names the magnitude of this evolution. Postmodernism represents the beginnings of a new political consciousness that rejects the Machiavellian realism of modernism in favor of a worldview that demands real fairness for every living person, regardless of where they live or how much wealth they have. In its most advanced expressions, postmodern politics embody the spiritual ideals of universal justice and worldwide equality. And these ideals contrast sharply with modernism's historical tolerance of racism, sexism, ultranationalism, and the economic blindness that condones the ongoing destruction of the environment. In solidarity with postmodernism, integral consciousness sees that in the long run, the ethnocentric politics of group selfishness are dead. That the future belongs to those who recognize that all lasting political progress is grounded in morality and that everybody counts. The integral worldview thus recognizes that civic improvement ultimately depends on the further development of the ethic of fairness within human society and government. Integral consciousness can see that the increasing morality of interpersonal relations is the foundation of all real political evolution. So, it would be nice if one could wave a magic wand and bring everyone up to these postmodern levels of consciousness so that we could start the vital work of creating integral solutions to our cultural and global challenges. We can't. But take heart, because eventually, the consciousness of enough people will rise so that the values many you use hold dear will become the dominant mode of being. But it's not always easy to be ahead of the curve. In fact, sometimes it's downright painful. But earlier, we heard Stevie Wonder's lyrics from his song, Visions. People hand in hand, have I lived to see the milk and honey land? Where hate's a dream and love forever stands? Or is this a vision in my mind? I'm not suggesting a milk and honey utopia is coming, but a more whole, fair, sustainable, world-centric, compassionate community is. And educating people on the stages of consciousness can help them rise towards second-tier levels and hasten its arrival. It is not just a vision in our minds. But it will take wisdom, compassion, perseverance, and tenacity. Perseverance and tenacity are instinctual in other animals. Humans have to choose these and choose them continually. Remember part of Barbara Cogswell's poem we heard earlier entitled Spider. Repeatedly, my gardener blows away her tiny web stretched on the prickles of a cactus. And in less than a day, she silently spins another. So when the news of the day blows you away, again, keep spinning, keep growing in conscious awareness, and keep the faith. Blessed be, and amen.